Number 4A.
Well, today we will start with the text on animal magnetism, the way we have it in the last edition. And so we first want to define the place value of this chapter within the whole framework of the textbook. We know that the textbook is laid out in the 4x4, four chapters on the Word, four chapters on the Christ, four chapters on Christianity, and four chapters on science, each one reflecting the other sides. Here we come to the fifth chapter, which is the first one under the Christ as the Word. Now, what does that mean? We have the standpoint of Christ that reflects the Word. We know what the Christ is. The Christ is always the standpoint of God that translates itself to idea and to man and the universe. So the Christ always takes that attitude that we go out from God and look out from God into the universe. So that's the Christ standpoint that is reflected as the Word in Christian Science, namely that we are accepting really that standpoint as our only standpoint. So it is a question that we accept actually the Christ. If we do not accept the Christ standpoint, then we are the Antichrist, then we practice animal magnetism. Every standpoint outside of God is a wrong standpoint, is a standpoint that is in the realm of unreality, and therefore every standpoint that goes out from human beliefs is animal magnetism, is to view the universe with a mortal belief, with a mortal mind. So here we have that standpoint defined, and we can see that we would never really be able to go out from God, from the Christ, if not before we would have had a true approach to the standpoint of God. Therefore, without the first four chapters, we could never really take in essence the standpoint of the Christ, because our consciousness would still be filled with all kinds of wrong notions, with ignorance, with human beliefs, with our human conceptions, and therefore the first four chapters had that great office or job to free ourselves from all that which is humanly conceived. Until in the fourth chapter then we had really the scientific standpoint of reality. So, having attained through the word order that standpoint of reality, now with the fifth chapter, we go out from that standpoint and look, so to say, at the universe from that standpoint. Here in the very first statement of the Christ as the Word, we see that from the Christ point of view, the standpoint of human belief is animal magnetism, is a wrong standpoint, and therefore is not within the realm of reality, therefore unreal. It is not a right standpoint. So this we see here very clearly. So we can read the text on animal magnetism and consider the text of animal magnetism, but if we read it without having inwardly grown through the first four chapters to the standpoint of God so that we can look out from God, then that chapter would be of no avail. It would not have the essence of the power of manifestation. So that still there would be a false concept within ourselves, and the false concept is evil, and we have seen that through the first four chapters, really, the question of evil has been sorted out to the point where then in the fourth chapter we could see that evil has no reality. That has always impressed me, the way Mrs. Eddy deals actually with those fundamental questions like evil, that she introduces a solution very gently, step by step. For instance, the the question of evil in prayer is very gently introduced. It only says, deliver us from evil. That's the only thing, as if evil would exist. It doesn't say it exists, but it is implied, so to say, that we have to deal with evil as something, and therefore the very first motion within us is that desire to be freed from evil. Then in the second chapter on atonement and Eucharist, there is constantly the demand, the Christ demand, really to cast out evil, as if evil would exist and would be something that has to get rid of. So constantly there is the demand to cast out evil. Then in the third chapter, again, evil is presented as if it would still exist, namely that she says the good must have ascendancy over evil. So again, in a latent way, there is still the belief there that good and evil both are existing, but that we should give to the good ascendancy over evil. Until then, in the fourth chapter, as we have seen, she finally states that evil is nothing, that evil has no reality, and shows that only in the realm of belief it seems that evil can act in any way, that the belief universe is naturally the evil universe, that is bringing forth also its phenomena, but that these phenomena are not of the nature of reality. Now, in the Animal Magnetism, she treats that question of evil again differently and says it is just a suppositional lie. Now, it is not even said that it has no reality, but that reality is now defined as a suppositional lie. That evil has, and this perhaps is the most important point in it, that evil has no power. This is the great point, that it cannot act, that it cannot influence. You can see, she defines now evil through something that has to do with a power sense, with a manifestation power to do, because Christ is the manifestation of God. So evil counterfeits that and says, evil says, I have also power, I can also act. And so actually the sense of power comes into focus in regard to evil, saying it has no power. We remember that in the chapter on spiritualism, it was shown that actually beliefs always have power within their own realm, but not within the realm of reality. That mortal mind has enough power or force to move a table in a spiritistic seance. Mortal mind has forces, but these are forces that have nothing to do with reality. Now here, in the Christ chapters, naturally we get the terrific sense of power through all the four Christ chapters. And now here, at the point of Christ as the Word, must first be shown that evil has no power, that animal magnetism has no power. Again, when we consider the way Mrs. Eddy touches upon that whole question of power, which is really a sense of the Christ, we can see that in the first four chapters, she gives little attention to the question of power, of the power of manifestation. She just says in the chapter on, I go quickly through the first four chapters, in the chapter on prayer, that everything that is directed to the divine is powerful. That's all that she more or less says. That everything that has a divine leaning, that is power. Then in Atonement and Eucharist, she said that Jesus could exert power over sin, sickness, and death. But it's only referring really to Jesus' experience in life. In marriage, it says, where it seems that in Christianity there is no more spiritual power, you can no more see that Christianity uses really the Christ idea to overcome, like Jesus, sin, sickness and death. But in spite that Christianity, as it is considered in a religious way, in a theological way, exercises no spiritual power, that does not mean that there is no more spiritual power at hand. It's just not used, but it's still there. And then in the chapter on Christian Science versus Spiritualism, it says that on the human plane, as I said before, mortal mind, mortal thought, human thought has power, the power of willpower, the power of thought transference, but this is only in the realm of the universe of beliefs. And that is only power, she says there, until the spiritual is reached. The moment the spiritual is reached, then the power of mortal mind, the forces of mortal mind, have no more any power over us, can no more exercise influence over us. And that is the point of animal magnetism now, that she says that the only power that can influence us is actually going out from God, the power of mind, that is the only influencing power, that there is no other power that can influence. Like Mesmer said, there is a force that is active, a magnetic force that acts between animal bodies, between human bodies, that act also between the stars and human bodies. There is a magnetic fluid that can exercise power. So that is the Antichrist, because it attributes to something outside of God the power of manifestation, the power of influence. Whereas from the Christ standpoint, which always goes out from God to man, from God to the universe, we can see that is the only power there that exists. And this is the core, really, of the chapter on animal magnetism. That the subject of power comes up again and again, first very much in the negative sense, that there is a belief in the power of despotism, the power of pseudoscience, the power to destroy something, the power to persecute and to harm people. It's the power of injustice, it's the power of condemnation. All that is shown here, that is the belief of the existence of another power besides the divine mind. But what is it that really gives to animal magnetism power? And her answer is that it is the belief of mortal mind that gives to anything power. So that it is really mortal mind that has to be blamed for animal magnetism. Animal magnetism is something that we really build up, that we create through our animal qualities and through our carnal mind. There is the false cause, the carnal mind, instead of the divine mind. So in those Christ verticals, we just have to make up our mind, from which standpoint do we go out? Do we go out from something outside of God? Then we have animal magnetism. Everything which we do, day in and day out, that goes out not from God, is animal magnetism. And we attribute to things qualities that they don't have, because we attribute them to those things and people and places and time. We attribute it. Therefore, animal magnetism has no more power than what we allow it to have, but what we attribute to it. And so we get really a sense that we have to handle within ourselves that standpoint that always wants to go out from us, that we and our thinking, our opinion, our activities is really the center of the universe, and that the universe is so as we look at it, and this is taking the wrong standpoint, the standpoint outside of God, and this is called animal magnetism. So the moment we go out from God, there is no more animal magnetism. So animal magnetism is a question of standpoint, we could say. And as we have said, this has to first to be handled within ourselves. This is the Antichrist. The Antichrist is therefore to go out from a standpoint outside of God, and in order to culture ourselves that we do not constantly go out from a standpoint outside of God, Mrs. Eddy spent those first four chapters to bring us into unity with God. You remember that every chapter had that sense, that unit of man's unity with God. That was in every chapter the main epitome for the chapter, namely, how do we approach God through prayer? Then in Atonement and Eucharist, how do we atone with God, not God with us? Then in marriage, how do we become one and in unity with the universe of God? And then in spiritualism, to see that there is actually only one thing existing since time immemorial, namely the coexistence of man and God, or God and man. There we have reached really the standpoint of God, and now the Christ chapters come and say, don't leave that standpoint anymore. Don't leave that anymore. Then if you don't leave that anymore, then only the God's standpoint is working, is manifesting itself, is translating itself to man and the universe, and that's the Christ operation, and that Christ is always good. So until we have handled really those first four and five standpoints, the Christ idea cannot flow into us. That's what I have said yesterday already, or indicated, that the sixth chapter seems to be for the one who is not spiritually instructed in the structure of the textbook, seems to be in the wrong place. We would expect that the sixth chapter should be the first chapter. Namely, there she begins with that statement that in the year 1866, I discovered really the Christ science, or divine laws of life, truth, and love, and named my discovery Christian Science. You would think that this is a starting point of in a book where somebody begins to tell people what they have discovered. But Mrs. Eddy doesn't do that, because she could see that revelation is something that only comes into us if it finds within us no resistance. As long as we have a standpoint, if we take a standpoint that is personal, that we are the center of the universe, that we are the center of our experience, then we have a barrier against the influx of a revelation. So, therefore, that which is not one with God through the first four chapters has first to be dissolved in order to be able to let the light come in. So each one of us must see that if we have that sense that we would like to be a transparency for a revelation of God, and fundamentally I think everyone has that within himself, that he feels, I would like to be that clean window pane through which the light can shine through without any hindrance, without any obstacles. Everyone has that, but in order to do that, we need the first five chapters. And therefore, Mrs. Eddy goes on in that statement in the sixth chapter, when she has discovered it, and said, God had been graciously preparing me over many years for the reception of this final revelation. So she could see that she had to go in life through a period of being prepared for that revelation. What did she go through? She actually goes through those first five chapters in her life. When one looks over her biography and asks what are the main points that characterizes Mrs. Eddy's life before her discovery, one can see that already as a child she would always pray. She would retire seven times a day to pray. And so prayer was something that was imbued, so to say, in Mrs. Eddy as a child already. Then we come to Atonement Eucharist, and we remember how when she was 16 or 15 or 16 years old and should become a member of the church, that she refused to the doctrine of the last, to sign the doctrine of the last judgment. She refused the doctrine of predestination, the doctrine of eternal damnation of the unbelievers. She refused it. She didn't accept it. And that is what she afterwards has shown in the chapter on Atonement and Eucharist, that everyone can be one with God, and is he one with God, that then everybody has the Christ within himself and can be saved. Then what was outstanding with her was her marriage, the two marriages she had before she discovered Christian Science, in which she made enough life experience to know something about marriage and how to refine the relationship in a marriage covenant, and so she could speak from experience when she was writing the chapter on marriage. Then she had another big experience in her life that turned her life, namely with Quimby, namely with a mesmerist. So animal magnetism as a chapter was born through that experience with Quimby, with investigating really mesmerism, investigating animal magnetism, and seeing through that question of animal magnetism. At the beginning, when she went to Quimby and was healed rather quickly, to a great extent, she naturally felt that Quimby was the savior of this age, and was feeling that he had really the Christ. But Quimby didn't want to hear anything about it, nor that he was using a science. And so Mrs. Eddy started out investigating Quimbyism, and especially as she had a relapse, she felt that there is something lacking, and so she arrived at that point of her revelation, the sixth chapter. So again, we can see that there is a divine order in being, that that divine order reflects itself in the textbook, in the order of the textbook, in the order of the chapter of each chapter in the textbook, that these orders are not orders that belong to a 600-page book that has been printed through the printing press, but that it is symbolizing the order of reality itself, and we are all embedded in that order of reality. And therefore our way is the way of that order, and we have to go that way. And I feel certain that what John Dawley said, that he could only be used for her, for the revelation that she had, or for the discovery of what Mrs. Eddy had revealed, by handling evil consistently and daily all his life. And that was already quite a long stretch of life, namely over many decades. So in this way we have defined our standpoint of animal magnetism. We also can define it still further from another angle. We have seen through the revisions of the chapter on animal magnetism in the main edition of Science and Health that she underwent a great development, that the first edition of Science and Health in regard to animal magnetism has nothing anymore to do with the last edition. There is no comparison anymore there. There is practically no sentence left there that would indicate what she has written in the first edition. And little by little she worked herself out of a lower concept of handling evil, always going higher and higher, seeing every time something more, until finally she could give us the chapter in the way we have it. The last change she made in that chapter was 1909, and it was a very important change that she made. So we can see it was a lifelong struggle, really, to see how to deal with animal magnetism. What is the difference between the early, editions and the last edition when we consider it in a global way. And I think we could say perhaps something like this, that up to the fifth edition, which we had with the dragon fighting against the woman, against the spiritual idea, that those first five main editions had its main accent on metaphysics. That it was a metaphysical approach to handle evil. She shows how we could, how malpractice was practiced, what was the method of it, transference of thought, willpower, transference of depraved qualities in the human, how then she would show how the patient could protect himself from malpractice, how we can protect ourselves from falling from a higher standard to become a malpractitioner ourselves without really knowing it. All that was depicted in those first five chapters. It was all a question of mentality, how to use the mental element for the good and for evil, and the transference of thought and willpower, all was on a mental level, on a level of metaphysics. Only then, when we touched the sixth and seventh main edition, we felt that something completely different came in, that there is a terrific change from the fifth to the sixth and seventh, namely, that suddenly she would go out from God, but that she would out in the sixth edition from truth and in the seventh edition from love. Well, going out now from a synonymous term means that that is the standpoint of science, because science is the contemplation of the infinite one that includes the infinite idea. That's something you learn in that booklet that I ask you to read about 10-20 times and then love it and then take it and hug it and see hold the promise in it, that booklet on the spiritual breakthrough to the next millennium. This is explained there quite clearly how today we are really in that period where we take as our standpoint truth and love, go out from the synonymous term and not are practicing ordinary metaphysics.